And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Got a lot of interesting responses to my television show yesterday. If you didn't see it, I think it's one that you won't want to miss. I talk about Hamas. I actually read from its charter, something that I think very few of its supporters in the West ever do. And I expose the United Nations Relief Works Agency as liars, as lying specifically about their claim that was widely repeated in the press, in everywhere from the Washington Post, New York Times, International Herald Tribune, world newspapers, Britain and France, claiming that Israel hit a UN school. As I pointed out, and I may end up replaying that broadcast if there's time, I show on the air John Jing, the head of the United Nations Relief Works Agency, the sole UN agency devoted to one group of people. There is no other. To be clear, and I'm going to talk about the history of UNRWA in this broadcast. There is the United Nations High Commission on Refugees, which deals with all the refugees on the planet. And there's the UNWRA, which is a relief organization for anyone who's got a great-great-grandparent who happened to live 2 years in British Mandatory Palestine. That's right, if you're 1/16th someone who lived in Jaffa between 1918 and 1920, or on Amman, remember Jordan was part of British Mandatory Palestine, between 1922 and 1924, then you get aid, welfare, and you have for the last 60 years. And UNRWA has, let's face it, if the conflict continues, UNRWA continues to get funds. They get a lot of money from, yes, the United States and Europe. The UN General Assembly hands it out. They're the ones who've been giving welfare to the Palestinians for 60 years. They're the ones, they are the reason why the Gaza population, which was 250,000 in 1950, is 1.5 million today. It's gone up six times. Not because of Gaza productivity, not because of jobs. Let's face it, unemployment's higher than elsewhere. The only productivity of any note in Gaza was done by the Israeli settlements. There was some farming activity. There was some activity under Egyptian rule and under Israeli rule. Lately, under Hamas rule, Hamastan, Gaza is falling further and further and further behind. But to understand what I was talking about yesterday, to understand why John Jing of UNRWA would lie, viciously lie, a lie that led to deaths across the globe. Jews were killed across the globe because John Jing of the UN lied. To understand why he would lie, you have to go through the history of UNRWA. You have to understand why it exists and why I think it's time it ceases to exist. We'll get into all of that. I also want to talk about how UNRWA itself has unfortunately hired and had a lot of terrorists on staff. Now, maybe you didn't know, but you've got to understand that this is an organization that lives and breathes through the success of Hamas. And they are the conduit of Western aid to Hamas. So I guess when you put it all together, it's no surprise that Irishman John Jing would viciously lie on British television. Or actually, what if makes it even more vicious was that it was, he didn't exactly lie. He said that, well, three people were in a UN refuge in this school. Actually, there's hundreds of people. I mean, but he said that three of them had just left the toilets and were struck by a missile and killed dead. He just didn't mention a couple salient things. One, that all three of them had walked outside the school of refuge that John Jing was so incensed because he says he gave the coordinates to Israel. How could Israel hit this school? Israel, we now know, didn't hit the school. Even though all the headlines said Israel hit the school. Even though the United Nations put forward a bulletin saying Israel hit the school, John Jing now admits Israel didn't hit the school. And the three people who left the toilets, here's the part he didn't tell the BBC, walked outside and were standing next to Hamas missile launchers, rocket launchers, mortar launchers, Hamas terrorists launching mortars into Israeli sovereign territory, towns and cities. Israel shot back at the mortar launchers, as everyone knew they were doing in the middle of this war. Everyone knew Israel's goal was simply that its population would not be bombarded. Even Gaza civilians know the most dangerous place to stand in wartime is near a Hamas rocket launcher. Now, maybe those three people didn't know the rocket launcher was there. I don't know. We don't know. They're dead. And maybe you think Israel went too far, should not conduct self-defense, should not defend its citizens. Maybe you think Israel should just let its citizens die. I should say that every other nation on the planet has the inherent right of self-defense under the United Nations Charter, and that includes Israel. And I've never heard anyone claim that any other state on earth, other than the Jewish state, should simply commit suicide. And if you know a better way for Israel to stop the repeated attacks on its citizens who are just trying to live ordinary lives, other than going after the people launching the mortars, you know, let me know. Call in. Post it on my website, radioinsidescoop.com. I'd love to hear it. I have never heard a single critic of Israel ever give an answer to how Israel should respond to the bombardment. I've only heard, well, maybe Israel should respond proportionately. Oh, is that what it is? Well, let's see. Hamas has launched 5,500 rockets, so Israel then can launch 5,500 missiles? Oh, no, that's disproportionate because Israel's missiles are guided. So Israel should launch random rockets just like Hamas? The ones that can hit civilians more easily? Is that what you're arguing? You see, opponents of Israel almost never base their claims on fact. They base them purely on emotion. They say, look, people died. Civilians died. Look at the awful, awful, horrific things done to these civilians. And you know what? I agree. There are horrific, awful things done to civilians. But to me, to take it out of the context of why these civilians are suffering not only takes a discussion out of fact and into emotion, but it also, it harms the very Gaza civilians that you would think people who say they care about them want to protect. After all, Gaza civilians were not suffering under Israeli occupation. They weren't being bombed. They weren't being killed. They could live in peace. Many of them worked in Israel. Many of them traveled to Israel. Many of them had nice farms. Many of them built the Israeli bomb shelters to which Israeli citizens go when Hamas attacks. In Gaza, Hamas uses the bomb shelters. See, in Israel, they put the civilians in the bomb shelters and the soldiers go out and fight. In Hamas, Hamastan, same difference. In Hamastan, Hamas is too cowardly to fight. They hide there and they put their children on the top. They say, kill my baby. Because here's one thing that you've got to understand about this conflict, if you understand nothing else. When a child dies in Israel, or when a child dies in Gaza, every dead child is a victory for Hamas and a sadness for Israel. Israel doesn't want Jewish children dead. Israel doesn't want Arab children dead. You could say it's because Israel's a moral country, or you could say cynically because Israel understands that the images will be used against them. Either way, every child that dies in a conflict harms Israel. And every child that dies in a conflict helps Hamas. If they kill Jewish children, then they're very proud. We talked about their charter yesterday, how killing all the Jews, committing a second Holocaust, is Hamas's ultimate goal. Establishing an Islamic state over all of Palestine, which means, of course, Christians are in trouble, and frankly, secular Muslims are in trouble too. Frankly, women are in trouble. We've seen how the Taliban ruled in Afghanistan, including Muslim women. But when an Arab child dies, Hamas loves it. They take lots of pictures. They show pictures of children pretending to be dead. You know the case. We talked about this of Mohammed Dahlan. Al-Dura, the boy supposedly who was shot by Israelis hiding behind a barrel. We've shown how this was entirely staged. If you have any doubts, post to my website, radioinsidescoop.com. I'll direct you to my broadcast of 3 years ago. The point is that dead children help Hamas, which is why they stick their own children on the roofs while they hide in the basement. Can there really be more evil than that? I mean, look, the Nazis tried to wipe out the Jews. Okay, they wanted to commit genocide. But have you ever heard of an organization, of a people, of a parent? Have you ever heard of a father or a mother who would stick his or her own child on a roof while he or she hides in the basement? It's heartless. It's heartless. Anyway, during the show, I was playing the comments of Israeli President Shimon Peres. He, of course, of the Labor Party in Israel, the more left party. In fact, Shimon Peres, as I pointed out yesterday, is someone who has worked so hard to compromise with Arabs for peace that the Israelis, frankly, are afraid he couldn't be a strong president. But he, like 94% of Israeli Jews, supported what happened in Gaza, understanding that Israel had no choice, and he gave an impassioned defense. Most of the news coming from the Davos conference comes from the Turkish Prime Minister's response, Erdogan. Now, Erdogan had spoken earlier in the broadcast, as had the United Nations Security Council Chairman Ban Ki-moon, as had the League of Arab States chairman. So you had three strong anti-Israel voices, and they took up about, 35, 40 minutes. And then Shimon Peres was up there for about 20 minutes. I'll get you the exact time after the break. But when Shimon Peres finished, Erdogan wanted to respond further. The moderator said he'd only give him a minute. I'm going to play all of this for you, let you hear it. And Erdogan wanted more than a minute and walked out. We'll get to all of that. I want you to hear it all. But first, I want to finish what Shimon Peres had to say. If you want to hear the first part of what he had to say, well, by all means, tune in to yesterday's broadcast. You can actually see him on television. But to hear the remainder of Shimon Peres, stay tuned. We'll get right to it right after the break.
%38
46%
42%
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I've been reading some of the comments, and actually a lot more email than I've gotten than comments. I think a lot of people want their comments on this to be private. What's fascinating is, as I said, I've got a lot of very positive comments on my show yesterday. And some negative ones, too. Fiercely negative, but only from people who had not seen the show. So I asked those who were extremely negative to simply listen to the show, because I think the show will show that, yes, I was anti-Hamas, but I'm not anti-Palestinian Arab. I'm not anti-Gazan. I'm not anti-Muslim. I'm not anti-Islam. I believe that the Palestinian Arabs should rule themselves as long as they don't attack Israel. Is that too much to ask? But I am anti-Hamas. No question about it. And I'm anti-UN organization that gives as welfare people for 60 years, including, as I said, you can get money from the world community if you have a great-great-grandfather who lived for 2 years in the capital of Jordan in the 1920s. Even if you're 15/16ths American. It's the only organization like that in the world. The United Nations High Commissions on Refugees provides for all refugees. It's only UNRWA that gives to descendants. We'll get to that more in a moment. I want to get to Shimon Peres and to his comments at the Davos conference. I played the first part of that yesterday. Again, understand, I did check the times, too, in the break. The times only matter because Prime Minister Erdogan of Turkey made a big deal of this. And maybe you should know a little bit about who the Prime Minister is. He is the Prime Minister of a Muslim party, which might sound not unusual for a majority Muslim country like Turkey, but you have to understand the history of Turkey. You see, Turkey has always been a secular country, a secular government where the majority of the people are Muslim. At least it has been since Ataturk took over following the collapse of the Ottoman Empire after World War I. And Turkey's been very proud of the fact that it is a democracy, and it should be. It should be. There are not many Muslim democracies. Turkey is by far the oldest. When I say Muslim, I mean countries with a majority Muslim population, not that Turkey is a theocracy, because it is not. One of the other advantages of Turkey. In fact, Turkey would actually ban wearing Muslim, the hijab, the covering, which, frankly, I think is sort of an attack on religious liberty. But they did so purposely to avoid Islamic control over their government. And, you know, Turkey was thinking of joining the European Union. And I argued I've argued for many years that the European Union should allow Turkey in, should not refuse them by virtue of being Muslim. They are a secular democracy. They should be part of the European Union. Well, the new prime minister has made me rethink that. Because he's turning his country slowly from a secular country into a Muslim country. He is ahead of a Muslim party. And frankly, a lot of his anti-Israel rhetoric is, it's based in this sort of Islamic hegemony, this idea, I think, that, I don't want to characterize it, I guess, except to say that the language he's using is first of all, it's causing tremendous damage to Turkish Jews who are being attacked in Turkey. Now, to Erdogan's credit, he said that he's against anti-Semitism. He's against those attacks. But what strikes me about his lashing out at Shimon Peres, and the two men have known each other for a long time, and in fact Turkey and Israel are good allies and have been for a long time, is that he did it based on emotion, not based on facts. Peres lays out a whole series of facts. If you listen to Erdogan's speech at the beginning, and one of the reasons I'm playing this, obviously, is that Erdogan has gotten a lot of media attention, Peres very little. He complains about things like the Israeli government kept him waiting to cross into places like Gaza. Well, that's not surprising. Gaza is extremely dangerous, right? Or to cross into, it may have been the West Bank. I think it was Gaza, though. I'll have to go back and see. What Israel does is they have to check, they make sure there are not weapons on trucks that go into Gaza, because so many trucks with weapons have gone into Gaza. So, whereas the Turkish prime minister may have had to wait 30 minutes, cooling his heels, Israel has an existential problem. One of those rockets that gets in, if they don't check, could murder a number of Israeli children. To me, it's kind of like somebody complaining about security in an airport. You would think, what a jerk. If someone said, you know what, I'm too important to walk through this metal detector, and so are all my people with me, I would say, I don't care who you are, walk through the damn metal detector. What's the big deal? We all do it. And we all do it because we don't want a plane to be hijacked. The same goes, frankly, for those that complained about Israeli checkpoints. What are the purpose of checkpoints? There were no checkpoints when there was no intifada, when there was no attack on Israel. Indeed, there was very little distinction between the West Bank and Israel at that time. Now, you could say that's right or that's wrong. But the checkpoints only started when there were suicide bombings killing hundreds of Israelis a year in discotheques and wedding halls, Passover ceremonies. And then they built the fence, the security fence, and lo and behold, it kept the terrorists out. And now people complain about the security fence. It's just amazing to me. It's like not just people complaining about airport security, but the very people who bomb planes complaining about airport security. Anyway, I don't want to get too far afield. I want to continue with Shimon Peres at the Davos Economic Forum. I'm going to go back just a little bit over what I did yesterday so you can hear the continuity. And I'll try, I'll play it through to the end when Erdogan stomps out and you can hear that part too. We may have to take a break in the middle. We may not. Let's see. Let's go forward.
Look what the people of the Palestinian people, the Secretary General of Fatah is saying about Hamas 3 days ago. His name is Asar Abed Rabo, a person that I know and respect, who is the Secretary General of the PLO Executive Committee. And I quoted him. I quote him 3 days ago. Hamas has turned Gaza schools, mosques, all universities into centers of detention, interrogation, and torture. Dozens have been shot in the legs, beaten savagely, and had their bones broken. Hamas only to support have broken. Hamas plundered trucks, bringing and distributes it only to the food, only to the supporters of their movement. They didn't give food to the people of Fatah.
Now just interrupt. That is important because the thing that the Europeans and some Americans were most angry about was they were saying, you've got to give food to these people. They're starving. Well, people really were not starving. There may have been a few, but there was no mass starvation in Gaza. But the real problem was that what starvation existed was because the leaders, Hamas, was not allowing the food to be distributed. They were taking the food for themselves and selling it to people and making sure that their political opponents, Fatah, which is the old PLO of Yasser Arafat, who are ironically the moderates these days, they didn't get any food. And how do we know this? Because the Palestinians are saying it themselves. This is not from Shimon Peres, as he points out. This is from the Palestinians themselves. Now, it's fascinating. I remember taking a class back in college called World Food Crisis. I can't even remember the professor's name, but I remember I learned something very, very interesting that I would suspect few people know. Here's a good fact. Surprise your friends. Every major starvation over the past two centuries, possibly longer, but at least the past two centuries, has occurred not for lack of food, but for political reasons. I'm going to repeat that. Every famine, every starvation, every time you see hundreds of thousands of people die because they don't have food. Every mass starvation in the last two centuries, probably longer, has occurred not from lack of food, but from political reasons. For example, North Korea. Millions have starved over the past few decades. Not because North Korea can't get enough grain, but because Kim Jong-il didn't want certain people to get enough grain. The same is true in China with its Great Leap Forward. The same is true back with the Irish potato famine in the 1840s. England had enough food to feed the Irish, but just didn't want to. I remember being asked this question on my final exam. Is there a world food shortage? Give me an example where a world food shortage caused mass starvation? And it was a trick question because there is no world food shortage. It's just that political dictators often decide not to feed their own people. And here is the clear case. You had Israel allowing 40,000 tons of humanitarian aid into Gaza. And Hamas took it over and distributed it and used the medication for its own fighters and denied it to many innocent civilians. And then they could show pictures of starving children to the media. It's disgusting, but it's true. Hundreds, at least, we know, maybe more, but hundreds of Gaza Arabs have been shot, tortured, had their eyes plucked out, some for doing things as little as smiling in public because Hamas felt that anyone who smiled in public during the recent conflict must be an Israeli supporter. How many of the people on the fatality list were actually killed by Hamas? We really don't know, do we? We really don't know. That doesn't mean that Israel's perfect by any stretch. But how come the world doesn't complain when Hamas kills, tortures, massacres, steals food? That's what Shimon Peres is saying. And frankly, it seems that only in the United States and Canada do you really hear this sharp condemnation of Hamas. Let me go back to Shimon Peres.
They killed 100 leaders of Fatah in full daylight. They throw them from the roofs. What do they really mean? Is that a matter of definitions? Israel does not want to shoot anybody. For us, all children are as important as one can think of. I calculated a Paris Center. All the money we have collected went to the cure of children, Palestinian children. They didn't have insurance, they didn't have hospitals. In 5 years, we brought to Israel 5,500 Palestinian children and their mothers to be cured. By the way, there is no hospital today in Israel that doesn't have Arab doctors. So the children could have communicated with the doctors in the Israeli hospitals. That is our choice.
One quick point on the hospitals. Actually, Israel set up a clinic right at the Erez border crossing for people from Gaza to treat wounded or injured or anyone hurt or suffering in the Gaza conflict. Hamas ordered civilians not to go to Israeli hospitals. Did you hear that in the news? Oh, it's there. You can find the stories. It's right there in the Jerusalem Post and in other Associated Press. But they were minor stories. Hamas wants the people of Gaza to suffer. If they suffer, they get a propaganda victory and everybody blames Israel. Israel wants the children of Gaza not to suffer. That's why they have these hospitals for them. That's why they try very hard, although it's not possible to be perfect, to pinpoint their attacks on Hamas targets. Why is no one complaining that Hamas won't allow the people of Hamastan, the people of Gaza, to go to Israeli hospitals where they can be cured for free with Israeli Arab doctors who speak Arabic? Because Hamas does not want to show the world Israel's kind face. Let's go back to Peres.
To touch a child? But if you put a child, if you put bombs in a kindergarten, and if you hide yourself behind innocent families, and before we try to shell anybody, we telephoned the people. We says, please leave the place. We don't want to hurt you. We made during those 20 days 250,000 telephone calls before we shoot. What could we do? What was our choice? And what would any government do? I'm very much sorry, Mr. Secretary General, about the United Nations building. According to our record, they start not by your knowledge, they started to shoot from there. And by the way, that when you bombed, Europe bombed Kosovo, you hit the Chinese embassy. Did you want to?
Again, this point, this was back in Davos when Peres didn't know the truth. Now the United Nations has admitted that Israel didn't hit the school at all. They hit nearby the school where Hamas was shooting from. So Israel had to apologize for something that it didn't even do. And of course, as he points out, in the war in Bosnia, we did accidentally bomb the Chinese embassy. It was a mistake. It wasn't on purpose. Mistakes happen in wartime. Let's go back to Peres.
And hundreds of civilian people were killed in the bombing, too. Okay. So, please, I want to speak clearly. Israel does not need a ceasefire because we never started a bullet. And we shall never do it. And the minute they'll stop shooting, there will be a ceasefire. We don't need anything else. Every moment, every day, we're not interested in fire, we're not interested in hurting or killing anybody. Now about the peace process. First of all, I want to say that it was a great move on the side of the Secretary General of the Arab League to introduce the Arab Initiative. I think that was a very positive move in a bitter history of misunderstanding and confrontations. The problems we were facing were the following. A, we started to negotiate directly with the Palestinians. President Mubarak told me, look, finish your negotiations with the Palestinians, we shall consider as the first move to an overall peace. We are negotiating, and I think we made headway in extremely complicated issue. Take only the issue of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is not a piece of land. Jerusalem is fire. There are three different religions, and there are different streams in every religion. And people are fighting about every window, every door. It's easy to say, make an agreement. We are trying to find a way. We told the Palestinians that we are ready really to accept 242 and 338, which means really to return almost all of the land of the West Bank to them. Gaza we left completely. What is there to fight? So the ceasefire is, as far as this is concerned, is not a problem for us. We never start, we shall never start fire. And when they fired against us, we replied, but after a great restraint and thousands of people were killed too. They weren't killed in a concentrated manner, so what? Doesn't matter. Now I think what we have to do, and by the way, I am for the restoration of Gaza. We have nothing. There wasn't a day that we didn't supply water and oil. I personally read every week a report about the humanitarian situation in Gaza. If something is missing, the government and myself, we are intervening to make sure there will be enough food and fuel. The tragedy of Gaza is not Israel. It's Hamas, who created their dictatorship. A very ugly one. And the problem of the crossing now is not because we want to control the supply of food or building material or medical. They build tunnels to bring in those missiles. And they build an underground system of tunnels where, by the way, the leaders hide themselves there and they forgot the people. I think, yes, we would like to see Gaza flourishing. Gaza is a small place with an intelligent people. When we started to talk with Mr. Arafat, we took as an example Singapore. Gaza, together with the West Bank, are 9 times larger than Singapore. In Singapore, there are more people than in Gaza in the West Bank. Today the problem is not land, but really education. And Gaza is not our enemy, and the people in Gaza are not our enemies. And we want to live with them in peace. We don't have hatred, and we don't have plans. For that reason, we left Gaza. And we are for restoring the life in Gaza, but without dictators and without shooting, not only us, but the people of Fatah.
But
and then
Mr. President,
we
should,
just 1 minute.
Might end there.
And then we want to renew the negotiations with the authorized Palestinian Authority. We made headway. We want to start right away. We want to do it with the quartet. We want to do it straight away. We don't want to waste time. Our aim is peace, not war. And when we win a war, we don't consider it as a victory. For us, victory is peace, not war. We have power. We shall never use power unless we don't have another choice. And when we have a choice, we want peace. And I think that Hezbollah has learned a lesson. They stopped shooting. Nobody stopped them to shoot, but our reaction. I hope Hamas will also have a lesson. They will stop shooting and start talking. Everything that we can achieve is by talking, not by shooting. And that was, and that is, and that will remain the position of Israel.
Thank you, Mr. President.
I thought that was a powerful speech by Shimon Peres. One of the best, actually, that I've ever seen him give. As I said, he's someone who has really worked hard to work with the Arabs. Many Israelis blame Shimon Peres for the Oslo Accords, the Accords in 1994 that took the Palestinian Liberation Organization, PLO, Arafat's organization, out of exile in Tunis, where really they couldn't harm Israel. They were too far away. And because they accepted Israel's right to exist, finally, agreeing that there should be two states, that there Jewish state should exist somewhere within some boundaries, Israel allowed 20, 30,000 armed fighters back into West Bank and Gaza. And we've seen since then, of course, a great increase in the amount of violence and war. Many people blame Shimon Peres for being idealistic enough to believe that the PLO could be peaceful. And they say, look, you allowed them back in. People like Peres and even Ariel Sharon decided to leave Gaza in the hope that the people of Gaza would actually build a future for themselves. As Barack Obama says, people should respect you, what you build, not what you destroy. That if you unclench your fist, we will shake your hand. That's been Israel's position for the last 60 years. But of course, Hamas took over. And Hamastan seeks not to build, but only to destroy. And in the process, they destroy a little bit of Israel and a lot more of Gaza. I will get to Prime Minister Erdogan and his walking out, his response to Shimon Peres, right after the break. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico, 1-800-947-AUTO.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I've been playing the clip from the Davos Economic Conference. I'm now getting to the part that's most famous. The part about Shimon Peres actually was very little reported, which is why I wanted to give you the Inside Scoop. Normally, I wouldn't quote about the amount of time someone speaks, but since the Prime Minister of Turkey made an issue of it, let's go through it. For the first 40 minutes of the hour-long meeting, you had opponents of Israel's policy in Gaza. You had the Prime Minister Erdogan of Turkey. You had the Secretary General of the Arab League. You had the UN's Security General Secretary of the Security Council, Ban Ki-moon. And all of them were quite critical of Israel. That's probably why Peres was so passionate in responding to each of those critiques, and he responded for about 20 minutes. So if you say, on the one hand, opponents of Israel got 40 minutes and supporters of Israel got 20 minutes, you could say that actually it was stacked against Israel, and Peres might complain. Or you could look at it and say, well, there were four people on stage, and the three anti-Israel people each got 13 minutes, and Peres got 20, so you could say he got more time. In any case, Erdogan wanted a chance to give a final rebuttal, if you will. And he had a fight with the moderator on it because, the program was over. Let me play that part for you.
This has been a powerful and passionate debate. It's a debate that could go on tonight for hours, but we've already gone well past our closing time. Mr. Prime Minister, with apologies to Prime Minister Erdogan...
One minute.
But I'm going to hold you to the 1 minute, please.
President Peres, you are older than I am, and you have a very strong voice.
To be clear, of course, the Turkish Prime Minister is speaking in Turkish, and this is the translator, of course, whose voice that you hear.
I feel that you perhaps feel a bit guilty, and that's why perhaps you have been so strong in your voice, so loud. Well, you kill people. I remember the children who died on beaches. And I remember two former prime ministers in your country who said that they felt very happy when they were able to enter Palestine on tanks. Now, those are former prime ministers who have said that they have been very satisfied with themselves when they entered Palestinian territories on tanks. And I find it very sad that people applaud what you have said, because there have been many people who have been killed. And I think that it is very wrong, and it's not humanitarian to applaud any actions which have had that kind of a result. I've taken many notes. Unfortunately, there is no time to respond to all of them. But I will just say two things.
We can't start the debate again, please. We just don't have time.
Excuse me. Sözümü kesmeyin.
Please let me finish.
We really do need to get people to dinner.
Sixth commandment, thou shalt not kill. But we are talking about killing. And second point, Gilad Atzamoni says that barbarism is way beyond what it should be. Then there is the international relations professor from Oxford University, Avi Shalom, has said this. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. So I don't think I will come back to Davos after this. Thank you. Because you don't let me speak. The president spoke for 25 minutes. I have spoken only half of that.
Over to our host.
At which point, Prime Minister Erdogan walks off the stage. Not to be too technical, but Perez spoke for 20 minutes, and Erdogan had promised to speak for a minute more and spoke more than two, and the moderator stopped him. Maybe the moderator shouldn't have stopped him. My point is not about the silly timeliness, although I do think that it was very childish of the Prime Minister of a great country like Turkey to walk off the stage. My point, I guess, is to show the difference in argument. Perez argued with facts, and Erdogan argued with emotions. He said, I know the story of children who died on a beach. Well, you know, like so many of the mythologies, things like in the recent war where they said Israel hit a UN school, and they didn't, or the story where they say Israel hit an ambulance, which was proven to be false, or the story Israel massacred 5,000 people at Jenin, that turned out later, several weeks later, it turned out it was 54, of which 43 were Hamas militants. They just go on and on and on. The Mohammed al-Dura, who I've shown you, was conclusively proven by a French court to have been shot either by Palestinians or not shot at all, but could not have been shot from the Israeli position. The angle of the bullets, it was impossible in the forensic investigation. So the point is that this fiction becomes fact. The reason why it's important to make these distinctions, to say, no, Israel did not hit a UN school, you are lying, John Jing. And now John Jing says, well, I never said Israel didn't hit the school. I just said there's no place in Gaza is safe. He's saying now, I never said Israel hit the school. He says, I just said no place in Gaza was safe and that three people left the toilets and were killed instantly by a missile. And I forgot to say they went outside and stood next to a Hamas a militant shooting mortars. I neglected to point that out. It's awfully disingenuous, John Jing, a man who profits off the misery of the people of Gaza living under the totalitarian rule of Hamas. It's awfully disingenuous for the man who profits off making up lies about Israel, which serve to help Hamas rule cruelly over the people of Gaza and thus fatten John Jing's paycheck. John Jing should be fired. But he's not the first UN official to lie evilly about Israel in ways that lead to death. Death in Gaza, death to Jews around the world, death because people like the Prime Minister of Turkey actually believe these lies and aren't willing to listen to facts. He says that to Israelis, you kill people, thou shalt not kill is the Sixth Amendment. Actually, the Sixth Commandment. Actually, the Sixth Commandment is thou shalt not murder. Murder's different from killing. If you want to go by biblical law, then you should know if someone comes to kill you, and strikes out at you, you have the right to kill them. Killing in self-defense is not murder, not under U.S. law, not under, I believe, any nation's law. Not under international law, not under biblical law. It ain't pretty when an abused woman is going to be raped and she strikes back and kills the man that is beating and raping her. It ain't pretty. It also ain't murder. His other thing, he said he had two prime ministers who said they were happy entering a Palestine on a tank. I went and I looked that one up. According to the Turkish newspapers, that was Ariel Sharon and Ehud Barak. There is no public knowledge of these people ever saying that. And in fact, I think Ariel Sharon went into a coma long before Erdogan became president. And I really think it would be unusual for the Israeli prime minister to confide in the Turkish Islamic prime minister, something that he never said publicly anywhere else. Let's just say Erdogan was being a bit emotional. But that emotion matters. And it led to a number of anti-Semitic activities in Turkey. It led to a lot of nationalism in Turkey, and it ruined, frankly, well, I don't know that it ruined, but it has harmed the Israeli-Turkish alliance that, frankly, helps both countries a lot. The fascinating thing about the conflict in Gaza is how little the Arab governments support Hamas either. Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, virtually every Sunni Arab state supported Israel in the conflict, sometimes quietly, sometimes more openly, because they understand what kind of threat Hamas is to their own governments. So if they weren't concerned and they wanted to see Israel destroy Hamas, who were the people out there supporting Hamas? Who were they? They were largely people in Europe, in the United States, often people on the so-called left. Yes, often people who might call themselves progressives. Yikes, my people. I don't think they're my people, because just to be absolutely clear, the Democratic Party is solidly pro-Israel. People tried to argue Obama was not. There was a resolution in the Congress where Congress voted 380-5 in favor of Israel over Hamas, 99% to 1%, with only 5 people voting against it. So among liberals, among Democrats, among ordinary people within the mainstream of the Democratic Party, you don't find this anti-Israel nonsense. But you do find it among some on the far left. And unfortunately, many of them are popping up under blogs, liberal blogs. They're taking progressive blogs and they're hijacking them. Places like Daily Kos are being hijacked by people who hate Israel. Now, do they do it because they love Hamas? I don't think so. I received a wonderful, wonderful comment that I want to read to you in full by someone who calls himself Progressive Pro-Israel, writes it on my website, that I just think explains perfectly the problem with those on the left who complain about shows like this one that I just did, where I'm just citing the facts. You can't deny Hamas is an evil, anti-Semitic, violent organization. You can't deny the people in Gaza are in misery because of Hamas. You can't deny Israel ceased occupying Gaza and that Gaza attacked Israel anyway. Well, not Gaza, Hamastan. Hamas controlled Gaza. You know, you can't deny the UN lied about it or that the UNWRA profits from Gazan misery. It's very hard to argue with any of these points. What they're arguing is that I should not have a right to speak at all. There are people that say I shouldn't be able to do shows like this. I can't tell you how many people have told me, don't do this show. Not I want to argue with you. Not I want to discuss with you. Not I want to show another side. Let's have a conversation. No, just don't talk about it. Don't let the world know that the UN officials lied when they proclaimed an Israeli aggression that didn't happen. Don't let the world know about the Hamas charter. Don't give Israel's side. Don't show the obvious evidence that none of Israel's attacks on civilians have ever been intentional. And if there was one, that Israeli soldier who intentionally attacked a Gaza civilians would be tried and court-martialed, just as we would do to Americans. And Israel has said, if you have evidence of any real war crimes, present it to us. We have a democracy. We have a government. We do that. Now, there's a difference, obviously, between intentionally killing a civilian and shooting back at a missile, at a rocket site, at a mortar site, and accidentally killing civilians who are hanging out nearby, even though Israel phoned and dropped leaflets and told people to stay away from the Hamas mortars. And look, I know Hamas can plant those mortars very quickly. They go into schoolyards. They go into hospitals. Sometimes people can't run away. And that's horrific. And that is a war crime. And the war crime is Hamas's. But let me read this quote by someone who calls themselves Progressive Pro-Israel. It's not me. Somebody who wrote on my website that I think has got it just down perfect. He writes, I wouldn't be surprised if you get a strong reaction here. On this issue, there don't seem to be too many reasonable, sane, well-informed people out there. Instead, all too often, we seem to get knee-jerk anti-Israel on the left, pro-Israel on the right, but with very little serious analysis, let alone balance in between. Progressive pro-Israel writes, obviously, Israel, like any other nation in the world, isn't perfect, but when it's attacked by the likes of Hamas and Hezbollah, terrorist groups armed by Iran who want to wipe Israel off the map, it has the perfect right to defend itself, just as any nation would do. With both Hamas and Hezbollah, it's crucial to know that these groups purposely place themselves in the midst of civilian areas. In part, they do this to deter an attack against them by Israel. In part, they do it so that in the event of an attack, the clueless media will do their propaganda work for them by broadcasting bloody images and portraying them as 100% Israel's fault. It's maddening. Side note here, I don't know why I took 2 hours to say what Progressive Pro-Israel so beautifully says in 4 paragraphs on my website. So thank you, whoever you are. Let me get to the 4th paragraph, though. This is the one I find most interesting. This listener writes, the question is, why do certain, quote, progressives, unquote, seem to love Hamas, or at least excuse anything it does, and hate Israel, or at least blame it for everything? Yeah, that's my question. Answer, listener, please tell me why, because I'm wondering myself. And to be clear, I don't think most liberals are anti-Israel, but it's growing, and it's growing due to blogs like Daily Kos and others, where I think leftists are hijacking liberal ideas. I agree with them on a lot of things. I write on that blog. But please, answer the question. This is me talking, obviously, not the person who wrote on my site. Why is it that certain progressives seem to love Hamas, excuse everything it does, and hate Israel, and blame everything it does? This is my listener's answer, and I think he's got his finger on something. He says, quote, there are a number of factors at work here. First, a lot of these vocal, quote, progressives, unquote, are really the hard left, not really progressive at all. Second, a lot of Israel-bashing, quote, progressives, unquote, are badly misinformed, and that combines with their natural knee-jerk tendency to identify with the, quote, underdog, unquote, and or, quote, victim, unquote, to lead to an anti-Israel conclusion. Third, to some extent, it's a reaction against military power, which many progressives inherently distrust. Fourth, it's definitely a reaction to the neocons, Christian right, Bush administration, and others who many progressives despise. And fifth, sadly, there's been a strain of anti-Semitism infesting the left for decades. In the end, the line between anti-Israel and anti-Semitic becomes very blurry. Well, I think that listener just hit the nail on the head. You know, the left, and when I mean the left, I mean the old communist hard left, the anarchists, the ones that have those protests where they argue that, you know, the government was involved in 9/11 and the Soviets could do no wrong. I know these people. I remember doing a protest of the Bush administration in 2004, and this group from ANSWER, I don't remember what ANSWER stands for, Stop All War kind of thing, comes in, drowns out our protest. We only made a chance to be heard, and they come in with their marching band, and they take over with their red flags. And I'm a proud American condemning my government, but I'm not condemning America. Well, the left has always hated Israel for the same reason. Listen, when Stalin liked Israel for 1 year, the left loved Israel. But then the Soviets turned against it, and the Communist Party turned against them. It's just shocking to me. It's shocking to me that so many in the left could be controlled by these old, really communist parties' ideals of anti-Semitism. Now, do I believe that all anti-Israel leftists are communists? No. No, I think most of them, just as the listener wrote, just don't know the facts. And they don't want to know the facts. And they don't want to discuss the facts. And they won't believe the facts if you tell them the facts. You could show them John Jing's statement where he said that actually Israel didn't hit the building, and they'd still believe he did. You could show the prime minister of Turkey that actually the children on the beach that died because their father was playing with an unexploded ordnance, which is what the investigation found out, and it wasn't just Israel, but other, you know, independent investigators that found it all out. He wouldn't believe it. You could tell Peter Jennings that 5,000 people weren't killed at Jenin, only 54, and 43 of them were Hamas operatives, and Peter Jennings wouldn't apologize. Because it's not about fact. Those that are pro-Hamas or attack Israel, not complain about a certain specific Israeli action, but actually believe that Israel has no right to defend itself, if you believe that only the Jewish state, unique among all nations, has no right to defend itself, that Christian states can defend themselves and Muslim states can defend themselves and Buddhist and Hindu and secular, that every nation on earth except Jews have a right to defend themselves, then aren't you really saying go to the gas chambers and don't complain? If you want to say Israel can defend itself, but here is a way out. Here is a way for Israel to defend itself, to stop its people from being bombarded, to have safety for its people without killing a single Arab civilian. If you have an idea of how to do that, show it to the Israeli authorities. My God, they'll implement it in a minute. You'd have a miracle. No one knows of any magic solution like that. War is hell. In ending World War II, the United States of America dropped an atomic bomb on Hiroshima, killing 250,000 innocent civilians, and then a later one on Nagasaki, killing tens of thousands more. Was that necessary to end World War II? I don't know. Truman made the calculation that fewer would die by dropping one atomic bomb, or two, I should say, than by invading Japan. Was he right? I don't know. But does anyone say that the United States was out to massacre and commit genocide and destroy the Japanese people? No. You can argue the atomic bomb was wrong. I happen to think the second one was probably a mistake. And I don't know that we should have dropped the first one on such a large city. That's a fair complaint. But it's not fair to say the United States was just interested in incinerating Japanese children or that their deaths made anyone in America feel good. It ended a horrific war. If there would just be a little bit more honesty here in dealing with Israel, a little bit more decency in understanding the difficulties of a country. The only country on earth, to my knowledge, that has so many nations and peoples seeking to destroy it. And they, you know, it's just the leader of Iran. I know the people of Iran happen to be very pro-Israel, but there's also a lot of hatred. Even in moderate states like Egypt and Jordan, there are a number of Arabs that will tell you they want to wipe Israel off the face of the map. After all, if you're anti-Zionist, what does that mean? It means that you don't think a Jewish state should ever exist. So what do you do with the 5 million Jews sitting there in Israel right now? What do you do with people who can't exist? You flood the territory with Arabs, and then you do what? Well, according to Hamas, you kill all the Jews. You make a second Holocaust. You create the exact same thing that Israel was created to avoid. I would love it, if someone on the left, on the right, someone who is pro-Hamas, someone who is attacking Israel would come on my show, would debate me, would use fact, and would explain for me what they would do if, as Shimon Peres puts it, missiles were being launched, rockets and bombs were being shattered on their cities. If 1,000 rockets rained on Istanbul, does anyone doubt the Turkish prime minister would respond? No, I don't think anyone doubts it at all. So I hope you've enjoyed the show today. If you have any questions or comments, please feel free to post them on my website at radioinsidescoop.com.
This is Mark Levine, signing off.